2013, you two toured together.
We're not talking about 2013.
You got any stories on Shawnee? Because everyone seems to come on it and have a story about Shawnee. And I assume you must have.
Exactly like Tom. I was not nice.
Don't do the usual. Don't shout over everyone. Let him have his moment. Just be quiet, Shawnee.
He never came out of his room.
House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe. Game changed.
So, Shawnee, is it coming home, mate?
If I hear that, I'll absolutely reef someone.
Is that because you hate football or just being Irish, you hate England?
No, it's actually the thought behind the whole, it's coming home. I can't do it properly, but everyone is saying it and it's pretty annoying. I'd rather just watch the football. But the best of luck to England, in fairness, to having won a serious competition in I don't know how many years. So I'm hoping to do it.
Yeah. Well, there we are. It might be. Fingers crossed for us. But welcome to House of Rugby, powered by Vodafone. This is episode 3. What was your weekend like, pal?
I had actually a very, very good weekend. I went to, haven't been to the race in a while, so I went to Sandown, put on a few small bets, won a small few bob, and had a great time with a few of mates.
Any inside tips before you were there? Or?
No, there wasn't, but I spotted this Sonny Liston was a horse. Wasn't a favourite or anything, and I just liked the name. Backed him. 50 bob on the nose. Got back about 6:20, I think. So it was an absolute cracker. So we had a lovely day. We had a lovely day, to be fair. Yeah, grand.
Well, we're lucky to have Tom Croft here. I think you meant to introduce him, pal. So I was about to get to that.
But I thought our conversation was still running.
Don't worry, lads. I'll just sit here. It's fine.
we'll introduce you.
It's just nice to be here.
Leicester and England and British and Irish Lions. Tom Croft is with us tonight. Welcome, Tom.
Good to see you, lads. Nice to be out of Leicester. You know, us Leicester boys stick to our own. So I'm in the big smoke. who'd have thunk it?
You claustrophobic or you?
I'm a little bit nervous. I'm sweaty. Train coming down. Some weird taxi called Alison Lee. Never heard it before, but it's all good, mate. Yeah.
What have you got this weekend, mate? Did you catch the Lions at all?
I did. As you probably know, I'm not a big rugby watcher, but it's the Lions. It's 12 years since I was last there, and it's nice to see the boys starting off against the Golden Lions. And I'm pretty excited, actually.
Nice. Shawnee, your dogs? You got the second one over yet, mate?
I'm heading home this week now. I'm bringing back Drake with me. So that's the Black Lab. He's the Black Labrador. So he's coming back. I'm getting the ferry on Wednesday or Thursday, and then I'm back a week later or 10 days later. So he'll come back with me. So I'll have two dogs in the flat with me, and exciting times ahead.
Nice. And you're not going to try and sell that app to me anymore, are you? Gun dog, is it?
Well, it's actually
you got
really
shares in that, because as soon as you sent that to me, I thought,
I don't have shares
in it.
I'm just genuinely, it's the best way to train any type of dog. It doesn't have to be a gun dog. It's just the simplest way. And I've done it with Zeus, the Cocker Spaniel, since he was a pup. And like, he's literally like the most obedient dog in Tennington. Fact. By the way, everyone says it to me. So
really? Okay.
It's a very good app, the gun dog app.
All right, well, maybe I'll get onto it. You know, little Cookie is a week old at my house.
And Cookie, your dog's called Cookie.
Say
no more.
Alex definitely picked that name, didn't you?
Well, she's a little dachshund, and she's chocolate coloured with a little tan.
Little handbag dog.
Well, yeah. I'm in London, you know. I don't have all the countryside like yourself.
That's what you do in London, to be fair, yeah.
You know, and she's a beaut, to be fair, very cute and very cuddly, just not ideal at night time, as we established.
This is not the conversation I was expecting on House of Rugby.
You had to check the name there. Yeah, so I did. How many other podcasts are this week,
dogs.
Is it?
Loads.
Fair enough. Well, we'll get on to the game then, because Crofty's obviously needs to get back to Leicestershire, you know, late night. What time's the last train?
I think it's quarter to two. Let's go. Crack on.
Thoughts on the game? What did we learn, boys?
It was a good start. Putting the game in Murrayfield to one side, I think it's where we started in 09 against the Lions. It was Golden Lions back then, Sigma Lions now. It wasn't about showing too much. I think what you saw last night won't be what you see in sort of a couple of weeks' time in terms of how we're going to approach the set pieces. There was a lot of very quick lineouts, a lot of balls over the top to Harris. In terms of boys putting their hands up from the outset, Hamish Watson, you know, obviously fellow Oakham boy, you know,
have to plug
carrying on the tradition. Yeah. Toje Laws, those boys, I think, were standout. Josh Adams, you know, there's a lot of guys who've always played well for their country. I think they've really stepped up another notch. Lions is about setting a standard and letting the boys the following game try and surpass it. So it's a good start for the boys.
Yeah, it's always a weird one, the first few games in the Lions series, I think. I think, I was just saying earlier, it's probably in 2017, it was a Crusaders game that really was a first test match as such, where it went to another level. The intensity of the way we were playing and what we were about and how we were going to play against the All Blacks. So I presume it's very similar now. It's kind of the same kind of traits. They've had two games now to warm in, two different teams, massive amount of changes, seven or eight changes last weekend, maybe a bit more actually. And still some standout performance as well. You talk about Hamish Watson, I thought he was unbelievable again. I thought Chris Harris put his hand up. Someone who there's been a lot of talk about, about him being in the squad, etc. Very dangerous with the ball in his hand. Something we haven't seen a whole lot of him probably do with Gloucester, because he's defensively so sound. So it's not going to set the world alight just yet, the tour, but they're building and lads are getting game time. I did think there's a few things that we've seen yesterday that I thought Finn was a little bit loose at times. And he's going to be like that because he has that X factor. But is it going to be a problem when it gets into the big stuff?
Obviously, there was a lot of talk about Finn and Owen playing together, how that would go. I personally thought, it wasn't a match made in heaven. I thought if you're going to go down that route, you have to have a very big 13 or a big winger playing. Like you see, England did it with Ford, Fowle and Manu. You know, in the last Lions, you had Sexton, Fowle and you had Jonathan Davis, to do a lot of the ball carrying. Mm. Interestingly, your thoughts on that and how you saw it go out, really?
I mean, you're asking me to comment on the backs. I mean, let's face it, I did the line out and stood out wide on the width waiting for the ball to come back to me. So I actually thought it worked okay. I thought Finn and Farrell actually swapped and were interchangeable in terms of Faz stepping up at 10 when Finn was going out the back. So I think in terms of that, it probably did work. South Africa having the unexpected against them is probably actually a good idea. What they're going to bring. So they showed it against Georgia. They're going to be powerful. They're going to be set-piece orientated and try and take you apart as they have done over the last 10, 15 years. So I think showing something different will potentially outwit them. There's some guys in there, again, like I say, haven't had a huge amount of international experience. Again, they're the sort of players who are going to shine because they're not known. I think guys shine who aren't known, especially on the international stage, could, this tour could be the making of them.
But against South Africa, you still have to do the basics well. You have to get over the game line first and foremost, and you have to defend Delindi or whoever's coming around the corner after that. The game line's so important, and I think it's just something to look going forward. Having both of them, I think, is a luxury at this stage.
I didn't think it was a bad idea to put them there, obviously, to try them, because it could happen down the line. I just think it was a little bit of misread. Finn double pumped a few times like he does at the line. Faz overran him once or twice. A few small bits like that. And they haven't, to be fair, they're actually training together probably only a week because they arrived late, etc. So, and as a combination, probably only since Monday or Tuesday of last week. So there's a few bits like that, I think, that they'll get it right, but they just need to get used to each other. And you could see some of the mistakes they made as a 10-12, for instance. But I thought when Faz went in at 10 in that last 20 of the game, we start to play a little bit more, balls out the back. He had the ship running a little bit more smoothly, I thought. And that's what I'm saying, is Finn, is he going to control those bits and pieces when the real pressure is on?
Yeah, I think for me, and obviously I'm biased, but I thought when Farrell was at 10, Elliot Daly came on, we did look really dangerous. Now, I'm pretty sure if Finn had been at 10 then and Farrell had gone off, then it would have been pretty similar as well. I just think that it worked really well. You had Harris carrying, you had Elliot playing out wide, using his ball playing, and we looked really dangerous. But I guess, do we think that Faz is going to play 10 next week, or is he going to continue at 12 on the game on Wednesday?
I don't know, in terms of turnaround, obviously you've got the Sharks coming up. I think there was a fair bit of pressure on Finn's shoulders. He was selected, he was seen as this maverick, a bit of a loose player, over and above someone like Sexton, who's that sort of, he's proved himself on the international stage. So there was probably some pressure on Finn. The double pumping, as you say, was probably a result of him just sort of trying to find his way in this. And as I say, it was the first game. You're at altitude. I remember playing the first training session in Johannesburg. I wasn't aware we were at altitude. And I remember training thinking, Jesus Christ, I'm absolutely blown out my ball, literally out my bollocks.
I thought you were in Leicestershire, did you?
Yeah, literally. I thought I could see the sea. Yeah. So I couldn't work out why I was dying. So for the first game in South Africa, being in Joburg, the boys have been absolutely blowing. I remember in 09, Steve Ferris went from R22 and ran the length of the pitch and almost had a heart attack in the trial. Yeah. You remember? Yeah. It was unbelievable. So you've got to forgive boys for potential, you know, not thinking, because, you know, once you're out of oxygen, trying to think, Christ, I struggled at ground level, let alone being 10,000 metres, but it's not 10,000 metres at all, but whatever many metres you are above sea level, it is bloody tough.
Yeah, see, I suppose it's easy for us to sit here now and, like, dissect the game and stuff, but that is a major point in the whole thing, you know, playing at altitude, first game, especially the first 15, 20 minutes into something like that, and then the last 15 or 20 as well, if you're still on the field at that stage. But he did, like, in fairness to him, he pulled off some glorious touches as well. I've just kind of this thing is like where does he get the balance right, especially just because he can produce a piece of brilliance, but in these test games you have to be so calculated about it, especially against the world champions.
I think it's so hard because there's no one in the world better at the kick pass. You know, his little chips, his ability to throw those flat passes is exceptional, but then, you know, knowing Warren Gatland without getting the whole of Scotland on my back, it's more knowing Gatland, and you guys know him better than me, but when he's trying to run it from his own post and he gets intercepted and it gets a bit too loose, he doesn't strike me as the sort of person who's going to want that fly half. You know, the Dan Bigger, Owen Farrell kind of fly half, that's what he wants. You know, someone more solid who's going to run the ship, keep everyone moving, control the game and make their kicks. And Finn's the opposite, and he kind of knows he's not Bigger and not foul, so he's gone, well, I'm going to go and play the joker card even more and double down on the crossfield kicks, the chips, the long passes, the maverick plays, and I guess that we'll see what happens.
Yeah, altitude's no joke. It's tough, but I thought the boys were excellent. Some of the stuff we played was brilliant, and yeah, it's a definite step up from where it was at Japan, and we, you know, loads of things to work on, which is pleasing as well. Yeah, brilliant. I was happy too. You know, we had a full week's prep for this game, and yeah, look, you know, because it's a shorter tour, if you like, with a few less warm up games. You know, you've got to take your chance when you get it, and every opportunity you get to play is a chance to make a statement. So you've got to take them.
Do you think four tries in a game is a good statement for a test squad?
Well, who knows? You know, there's a few more games to come. You know, there's other boys with plenty of other opportunities, but you can only do what you can when you get the chance. That's the thing we always say prior to you know, in the change rooms, prior to going out in the weeks. You know, lads having their first game for the Lions today, it's pointless doing it unless you're going to enjoy it. You know, enjoy the moment. It's a special occasion for everybody, whether you've played for the Lions 9 times, you know, done 3 tours or your first time. It's always special. And like you said, if you play and you smile on your face, then usually you play some good stuff. And I thought we definitely did that at times.
Yeah, it was awesome for me to get my first appearance for the Lions, and a good win for the team. A lot to work on, but no, I thought it's a team definitely heading in the right direction with 4 more warm-up games to go. Yeah, Hoggy was really good tonight. Obviously, he's been the captain for the last few years for Scotland, and he's done an amazing job, and I think tonight he led really well. He's obviously got a lot of other leaders around him, which probably helped him as well, because you've got so many experienced players out there. But I thought Hoggy did really well, and obviously that standout moment where he tracked back and made that really important tackle, that was a big turning point in the game at that stage. And amazing work rate by him to get back and make that tackle for the team. Yeah, I think it's another week on, isn't it? It's another week of Steve and the other coaches implementing their strategies, so it's players getting used to that. Obviously, it was a different test tonight as well. A big physical team, but Japan, you know how good an outfit Japan are, so we got tested in different ways last week, in different ways today. I thought our cage defence, our defence in that, our own 22 in that first half especially, was really good, and there was a big turning point in the game where we managed to keep them out when they were attacking for a good 5-10 minute period, and I think that was that stands us in good stead going forward as well. I'm not really sure. I was happy with my individual performance tonight. I still think there's a lot to work on, and I think I can probably still have more involvements, but I think as a team it was a great performance, and I think there's a lot to work on for Wednesday and for the next 4 warm-up games, and we're going to get tested in different ways, but I think overall it was a good performance by the team. Yeah, I think training's been, like, you know, when you go from club stuff to Scotland stuff and then to Lions stuff, it's an even bigger step up. I think, you know, that was led from the front by people like Alan Wynne in the first few weeks, and now with the other leaders stepping up as well. The intensity in training's right up there. Short sessions, but everything's 100%. You have to be very much on it. And like you say, the competition for places is immense. There's so many good back rowers. So yeah, every time you get a chance, like Jadu was just saying there, every time you get a chance, you've got to try and put your best foot forward and try and take it.
Moving on to the back row, obviously you mentioned Hamish. You know, what was it that stood out for you guys, why he was so good?
I just think everything that went before the tour, saying, you know, is Hamish big enough, which is, it's just a load of rubbish. You know, I thought that whole size thing had gone out when Bakke was playing. The way Hamish just, from minute one, was just, he's a physical, I mean, the size of him, I mean, yeah, it makes you look small. I mean, you're a sizable lump, you know, when you're drinking on the beer. And, you
know, he only plays 10 minutes a week at Irish, so he does get big.
He's on the what bike for the other 8, yeah. I just thought the way he handled himself, the way he got involved with the game, the hits he was making, the way he carried, he was a nuisance. You know, he's your typical sort of seven. Mm. I think the whole thing about, is he big enough? It's just a load of rubbish. I mean, it's just, he was class. I was being sweet to him before the game, little tap on the backside after the game. He's just, for me, he is that nailed in seven, but it's obviously how that then works with the dynamics of the rest of the backer options you've got. Because I know it's been one game, he was class, you've got a raft of other players coming through.
Yeah, and then you do, like, I thought he was class yesterday as well. I just thought his general work rate, he's still 105 like kilos. Everyone thinks he's lighter than that. Like, he's still, that's...
It's 10 in the mallet though, isn't it?
Yeah, but there's, he was effective in his carry, he was effective in defence yesterday, he worked incredibly hard. Like, then I kind of, if you're looking at it from a test starter, you're saying to yourself, right, he has his hand up in the air now. But then you look at the opposition yesterday as well and you think, where are they, like, in compared to, let's say, Wednesday when they play the Sharks? Who's, let's say, Tom Curry going to be coming up against? What type of back row are they going to have? And then, like, you say yesterday, looking at Hamish, that he's thereabouts now. But then Curry, like, you know what he's been about the last 2 years, and this is going to be his first game in a seven shirt for the Lions. So competition is mega there at the minute.
Yeah,
absolutely mega.
Because you said... Yeah, you know, a couple of weeks ago, you said Tom Curry was nailed on number seven, and you love Tipperick and you love Watson. Mm. Has that changed from the weekend? I mean, and for yourself, you know, what would be your back row dynamic?
I definitely
makeup?
Think it's changed a little bit from in my own head. Anyway, I think Hamish put his hand up now. I did think the way Tom was playing, he was just untouchable in terms of his physicality, his turnover rate, and Gats is going to look at this stuff. It's like Ty Byrne at six. No one's really said much about him at six, but he's the most turnovers in the Six Nations, for instance. And he's, like, you know what I mean? He's effective in what he does. He's a nuisance around the place. And would you have Watson and Curry together? Probably not, to be fair, because you're going to miss out on someone like Courtney or, you know, whoever's in the row, and then you might have Courtney at six as another lineup option, especially against what way we're going to try and play in these tests, which is going to be confrontation, first and foremost. And you want to dominate your set piece and have weight there. So
first test for you, who would be your back row?
I think the back row for the first test is going to be Curry, Faletau and Ty Byrne.
And would you pick the same?
I'd pick that on just currently what's happened. And then I'd definitely have Hamish on the bench, and then a back row, second row probably.
And you, Crofty?
It's one game in. It's really hard to say. As you said, Curry will play his first game, hopefully on Wednesday. First time in the Lions shirt, and he'll go absolutely hell for leather. The best place that Gats can be in a few weeks' time picking a test team is not having a clue which way to go. You know, A, that's a great way in terms of competition within the squad. It also stops there being a divide. You don't want the veg disappearing off on a sort of a midweek jolly because the test team are playing. You want competition to be till the Friday night and the coaches are pulling their hair out. For me, I mean, I was that impressed with Hamish yesterday that I think, you know, he should be in there. I was impressed with how Lawsy went. Mm. And then you're back in terms of your number eight. Simmons needs a shot. I said about the unknown in terms of players coming in. Safka not really knowing what he's about, bar watching him, what he's done for Exeter. He could be a real wild card to throw in there. And then if you approach it the way that Eddie Jones has approached England, it's not about having, you know, a guy on the bench. It's a finisher. I hate the whole term being a finisher, as I'm sure. I don't know if you were even involved with me when it was called finishers.
I was in the water squad, mate, and just holding tackle pads. Yeah, I wasn't really there. Yeah.
He was for the boys. He was finishing training.
You were popping over on the Tuesday like the rest of us.
Yeah, yeah.
I think, you know, having, say, maybe a Watson starting and a Curry coming on, or vice versa, I think the pressure on being that starter has disappeared. I think you need, it's a full 23 man squad.
Well, we had Adam Jones on here a couple of weeks ago, and he was talking about how Gats will look at training more than anyone else in terms of selection, what they're doing day in, day out, not just on the games. So do you think that plays into the sort of form more than reputation? Or do you think Gatton will go, well, we don't know how strong the midweek games are, so you have to still pick on reputation? You know, like if Curry doesn't play that well on Wednesday, but he's been so good in the Six Nations and for the last year, does he get picked? Or
I actually don't think he does, because you could say that about, let's say, me and Warbs when we were battling it out as well, because he was like, he picked us for the last test together. But before that, he was like, right, well, you've played better, so you're going to start. So I think he picks on what he sees there and then, to be fair to Gats. And if Tom doesn't play well during the week, it's Hamish is in the number one spot, in my opinion, then. Like, but I'm just saying, the way Tom has played, I can't see him having really that bad game as such, and not doing what he's done now consistently over the last two seasons. Like, he's been outstanding. So, but I do think Gats picks on what he sees there and then. I don't think he sometimes has perception. It's like dropping O'Driscoll, like, for instance. He doesn't mind making big, big calls. Whether that be a player who's been unbelievable during the Six Nations or for the last two seasons, if they're not unbelievable right there and then, you know, you're not going to be in the team.
And I guess on that, you know, someone who's played two games now, played unbelievably well, Josh Adams, scored four tries. I know a lot of them you'd say, you know, you could hobble over with your one hip for some of them, but you know, I thought he's been very impressed so far. As a back three, Reece Zammit, for me, you know, he's lightning quick. He can do things with the ball which others can't, but he needs the ball to come to him. And I think some of the other wingers can go looking for it better and such. And I feel like he still needs a big game if he wants to get himself in the test team. And Hogg was solid, but we didn't quite see him at his perhaps best. And whether that's the captaincy or not, he wasn't at his counter-attacking best. He wasn't getting in those wide channels and beating men as much as you'd want to see from him, really.
I love this, the way that rugby's gone, that he's asking two fours to diagnose the back play.
We are pretty skillful.
We are.
You spent a bit of time in the wide channel. Come on, like, yeah. Crofty, your highlights reel is unbelievable.
I was 15 when I was 16.
Really?
Yes. So I know a bit about back three play.
I saw a picture of you when you were younger the other day. You didn't look slim, pal. Gosh, you've done well, I'll tell you what. You've made the most out of that rig.
I didn't kick a whole lot.
Straight truck back, was it, rugby league?
But I think in terms of the backs, I think Josh Adams, not only, you know, four tries, yeah, say some of them were Wilkins, but his kick chase off of the box kicks were superb. In terms of Hoggy, yeah, maybe, you know, the couple of games he didn't start for Exeter in the back end of the season, maybe sort of, you know, stumbled his form a little bit. But I thought in terms of his, you know, his work rate, his ability, you know, that chasing down, yeah, he was chasing down at number eight at the end, but still made that tackle, the turnover, regathered the ball. So the class is there. I think for me, Hoggy's the starting 15. Josh Adams, you know, for Lewis, on your other wing, I'm sure as a wing, you'd be pretty annoyed that all the love's going to one wing. He gets one kick, one score. Pretty decent. You know, you're still a Lions test scorer, not a test scorer, a Lions scorer. So I think we're getting ahead of ourselves. It's the first game, the first real game, ignoring Murrayfield. There's a lot going on. The Sharks on Wednesday will be a huge test for the boys.
We haven't brought you along just to sit on the fence, mate, so we want your opinion. Oh, it's the first game.
I think the other thing with Josh Adams is that Gats said afterwards in his interview was quite interesting. So he's been the top try scorer in every competition he's been in the last five seasons, Josh Adams has, which is quite impressive, because he was in the Championship, wasn't he, for a while?
A while back, but he's been in the Premiership.
He was a top try scorer back then, came from nowhere.
And he's a real finisher. And sometimes when he first came on, people were a bit shocked. Like, he's quite quick, he's quite strong and stuff, but he finds himself really well on those positions to score tries, and it is a knack.
Yeah, and he's brave, and he's you know what I mean. He puts himself about as well. He's quite a tough lad by all accounts. So I genuinely think he's nailed on. I think he's nailed on the wing. And I know there's other lads, like you have Watson, you've all these boys come back in now as well in the week, like, but I just think Gats loves him. I think he really, really loves what he's about and his try scoring ability. And he does have his few favourites, to be fair to him.
So 100%, I think it will be, if you're his favourite, you're in a great spot.
Yeah.
Unless you do something stupid. Proper stupid. And
don't break COVID.
Yeah. yeah. That's the risk, yeah.
Yeah. Well, we got a quote here from Gatlin. It's interesting to see you guys have been under him, you know, with his mind games and everything. He said afterwards that we haven't come here just to make up the numbers, even though there are a few journalists writing us off saying we're going to get hammered, so hopefully we can keep improving. Is that just him with classic mind games, or is it... because what have you seen in the press that's sort of backs it up, really? I don't know.
I'd say it's a fairly dismissive comment from him, wanting just to take the light away from the Lions squad. You know, they're in a bubble. It's a real strange tour this year. There's no fans. They're basically staying in one hotel. They're in a group. They won't be seeing things. It's a strange environment to be in, but if Lions are the underdogs, happy days. That's a great position to be in. The boys know the squad, how good they are. They can go out there, they can win every single game midweeker and lead themselves into the test and absolutely go hell for ever out of the box, who haven't played a huge amount of rugby since the World Cup final. So is it Gats just doing a bit of an Eddie Jones, just playing a straight back, take the attention away from the team, potentially?
Yeah, definitely. I think exactly. I think you've hit the nail on the head, Crofty. And the other thing about it is, within the camp as well, the boys will know what Gats has been saying in terms of the media. Like, it's such a small bubble now at the minute. Some lads don't look at it at all, but I think it's going to be hard to get away from it now, with the way things are. And they'll use it as a little bit of motivation. I think there's a few boys in there that'll use that little bit of firepower when it comes to it. They shut a few people up. So I don't think it's been too hard, it's too bad, to be fair, any of the media stuff that's gone out there. He's definitely trying to take a bit of pressure and a bit of heat away from the squad.
Well, look, if the viewers and listeners want to head over to the official British and Irish Lions app powered by Vodafone, they can select their starting 15 for the first test. Crofty wants to sit on the fence a bit longer, clearly, but others can crack on. There's also the ability for fans to select their player of the series. After each game, users can vote for players with points going forward towards the overall player of the series. So after yesterday's game, who are the contenders? And also, who is your player of the game? So who is your man of the match for yesterday?
Oh, I genuinely would have given it to Watson, to be honest. I know...
we're happy.
Yeah.
He's Oaken boy, so we're very happy with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I definitely think Watson, just his overall performance was outstanding. Yeah.
Crofty? Yeah.
Echo his comments. Oaken boy, you've got to stick with him, you know. He was class. He stepped up first game. He set the level for Curry to chase. And hopefully Curry, you know, goes above that, and it makes a real interesting dilemma for Gatland.
Well, make sure you head down to the official British and Irish Lions app and get your votes in. So let's bring in our bock on the ground, Skulk Brits. How are you, mate?
I'm fantastic, guys. Hello.
Yeah, we've got Tom Croft here, so you would have played against him a few times.
How you doing, mate?
Hello, bud. He's given us a lot of hard times, Giddy, during our careers.
He has. When that Leicester dominance was there, it was tough. But let's get back to you and the family. Obviously, we saw on Instagram the kids were all singing the national anthem. Did you teach them the words, or they just sing along with the tune?
it's just the tune is so catchy, you know. But actually, they first got to know God Save the Queen, and we've got a shoot tomorrow. Walking up Lion's Head, and Christian asked if he can wear his Lion shirts. I said, no way you're wearing a Lion shirt. As you are proudly South African, you're supporting only one team, and that's the box. Do not put that Lion shirt for the next 2 months. Do not put that on.
He obviously wants to pick the winner. He knows that. So, well done to him. But on to South Africa. You know, it was a slow start, was it, for them? But they came through well against Georgia. What were your thoughts on the game?
I think they were quite nervous, Goody. It's the first time they've played together since the World Cup. I think they put a very high expectation on their performance. Started very slow, very, for me, quite nervous. Made a lot of unforced errors. But for me, there was, first of all, it was a game. It's a start of Jock's coaching as head coach. Rusty was there as well, so things internally won't change much. But it was nice for the boys to run out. It's a start, and hopefully they'll build on this weekend, and then hopefully they'll be okay when the first test comes against the Lions, because that's actually the only game that matters, is the test shows against the Lions.
What have you learned from the game yesterday? What players maybe stood out to you? Who did you think was sharp? Who was a little bit behind the eight ball maybe?
For me, I thought they were going to play C at eight. Playing Quagga is a bit different to what Dwayne brings. I must say Bongi played extremely well. The same with Eben. The Eben and Franco combination works. Although I think Luit brings a different dimension. Then you've got Peter Steele that didn't play for almost 18 months with a very bad injury, and he was just the normal Peter Steele to toy that I could remember from the World Cup. For me, Kovas was brought a spark from nine perspective, so it's going to be interesting to see who they're going to pick at nine. Is it going to be Fafa? Will Fafa come in or just slot in? Fassi as a fullback played out of position. They played him on wing. What a phenomenal rugby player. I think he brings a different dimension, especially with Vili there. I mean, on high balls, we'll get peppered by the Lions. So we want to be great in the air. And then for me, you know, a guy that stood out was Damon Villens coming off the bench. Maybe he can play the same kind of role that Frans Steyn played during the World Cup, if we want to go with our 5-2 splits. So that would be interesting. It was nice to see Jasper getting his first cap. But I think Ox, Bongi and Trevor did a great job. And then with Malcolm, Stephen and Frans coming out off the bench, they brought that dominance again from a forward perspective. I do think we still miss a guy like Ergia and Luit. Because the big secret we think from our win in the World Cup was actually our bench. You know, things were quite tight normally from minute till minute 50, and when we brought on the bomb squad, they opened up the game.
But obviously, you know, you haven't had much time together. It's been a long time since South Africa have played. As a first hit out, what was the sort of media reaction across the country really from it?
I think when I spoke to the guys that was at the game itself, you know, the commentators and the players, it's just extremely weird playing a test match in front of no crowds. I mean, that's one of the things in South Africa. The crowds do get involved quite a bit. You could hear Jesse Creel screaming on the mic, even watching the game, because he does organise the defence quite a bit. So I think they'll tick the box and said it was the first out. We need to limit the unforced errors and get a bit of momentum. But as a team, I think they want to build on this, as I said, and improve next weekend. But if we as ex-rugby players or supporters look at the game, we weren't up to scratch if you compare that to the Lions that played against the Lions this weekend. You know, the game, the physicality, the way they ran their plays was quite, for me, was good.
And obviously for the Lions, they've got the Sharks up on Wednesday. Do you expect a similar test as the Lions had last weekend, or a tougher test?
I think that from the Lions' perspective, they couldn't play their best squad. I think the Sharks will be a bit tougher than the Lions, but not to the standard that actually the Lions want. For me, I hope the Lions get overconfidence playing against these sides, because it's not the same. We can't play our internationals. We've got the biggest squad of players that's in the camp at the Springboks, so that means lesser of a squad in the local games. You know, so from that perspective, in 2009, we could almost pick our best sides bar the Springboks. Now the squad is bigger. There's less depth, more players playing abroad. So a very inexperienced provincial side playing against a very experienced Lions side. So I think not much will change. We'll put a fight up till about minute 50, and then the Lions will slowly but surely dominate the game.
Who do you think is going to be the toughest sort of provincial game prior to the test starting? So where can I suppose the Lions fans sort of say, well, if the boys go well in that game, they're in a good stead for the test matches.
I think the game they need to look at to see if they want to get measured is actually the SAA side, to see where they are. Provincially, it is actually either the Sharks or the Bulls. But once again, they've both lost a lot of players to the Springbok squad. So for me, it's the provincial games is making sure they get their formations right, players stay match fit and sharp. But I think the SAA game at Newlands will be the first test to see where they are. And then, you know, I mean, they've played, well, just come from a long European season. So they'll be sharp. We need to sharpen up. So I think, once again, Tom, it's that SAA side.
Will Snaiman be a big loss, as there is reports over this side that he mightn't actually be fit for the tests?
Well, it's a massive loss. I haven't played with an athlete like that. I mean, he's 6'7", 6'8". He weighs 125. He ran the 100 and close to 11 or just under 11. I mean, he's truly an athlete. He's just a phenomenal athlete. He will be massively missed in our squad. He's, as I read in the newspapers today, he went for skin graft. So, yes, a player like that will be missed.
That's what happens. That's what happens when you play with fire in Ireland.
Sorry, just interrupt.
Yeah. I don't know a rugby player who doesn't run 11 seconds.
Irish don't know anything about a fire, that's why.
Pouring petrol on a fire is never a good idea. Don't try this at home, kids.
Hey, sometimes you need to light the fire, I say.
Zgalla, it's been great chatting to you. Thanks for giving us a lowdown on what's going on in South Africa, and we look forward to hearing from you next week.
Thanks, guys. Lots of love. Thank you for the chat, and have a good night.
Cheers, buddy.
Cheers,
okay, as we've heard, boys, from Schalke, he mentioned 2009. What's your memories, Tom, from 2009? Give us a little bit of an insight of what it's like over there in South Africa's backyard.
To be fair, I've actually had to watch the DVD or the video, whatever it was, the VHS, to sort of remind myself. It wasn't until, obviously, the Lions started to gain momentum that I started to realise, like, it's been 12 years, and I had to sort of remind myself. And I'd always thought the games would been, we'd been smoked by the box, but we actually hadn't. It was actually quite a close series, which was actually quite nice to see. And I probably should have done some homework prior to it. But, in terms of how it was, I mean, obviously, I wasn't involved early on. Obviously, Quinlan was selected in front of me, then he got banned. Stephen Ferris obviously then got injured in training, which probably gave myself my opportunity to start in the test matches. So for me, I was 23 years old, proper sort of rabbit in headlights, you know, surrounded by guys who I'd come up through school watching play. And I was probably pretty timid, scared of messing up, didn't want to let the team down. And so obviously being selected in the first test match, I was proper shit. Well,
you were like a rabbit, weren't you? When you were scoring those two tries, you were running like one.
To be fair, I think the two tries sort of totaled at exactly about 10 metres in terms of running yards, and most of that's come from Dricko and Doc. So, no, for me, it would always be the highlight. Obviously, 2013, obviously meeting yourself, you know, obviously that was a highlight. But 2009 will always be the one which I say is the pinnacle, whether it was due with my age, the fact that the Lions hadn't been in a great place in 2005 following the New Zealand tour. We lost the two first tests, apparently quite closely, as I found out by watching the DVD. And then obviously winning that last test, who's going the length, giving it the big into the crowd and all that. It was just an incredible experience. Probably how it came around, having, you know, I probably got caught up with the media hype prior to selection, thinking, well, Stuart Barnes has said that I'm in, so I must be into the squad. Yeah. And then I remember getting announced at training, Harry Hurst got selected and I didn't, and Cocker just gave us a tap on the back and said, right, let's crack on. We were obviously playing Leinster in the final up in Edinburgh against you boys, which obviously we lost, but it wasn't a lot of time to compute what was going on. So by the time we'd played the final and focused on that, then went out in Edinburgh for a few drinks. We flew down to Pennyhill Park, and I think that afternoon we were off to South Africa. So you didn't actually have the time to think what was going on, for the nerves to sort of build. And then, apart from not realizing you weren't at sea level when you're actually 10,000 meters up in the air, It all came very, very quickly, and I was surrounded by guys I've been watching for years. So it was, mate, it was class.
One of the things that we have discussed quite a bit on the show as well is the off the field antics in South Africa. Like we said, we've discussed it here with different guests as well, of how much is that going to be missed? How much crack did you have in 09 out there? How fun was it? Like off the field, together in the team rooms, the fans, everything. I think it's going to be a huge factor on this tour, not having all that.
In terms of off the field sort of antics, social media again put sort of pay to that. I mean, I'm not talking sort of anything sort of, you know, dark and sordid or anything like that, but it's just things that potentially you would have done 10, 15, 20 years ago, which you probably wouldn't do now in case it got misconstrued as something wrong or inappropriate. So I think the times have changed. I mean, whenever I go to a rugby dinner, you listen to the guys like Willie John or Dean Richards talking about things, and Christ, you wouldn't get away with it.
You'd be locked up for the night. You'd genuinely be put in the back of a paddy wagon and sent.
Never again.
There's the key there as it's going. So that sort of thing will change. In terms of, is Lions more professional now? It probably is. I think every year it gets more and more professional. Mm. From 09 to 13, we had a good crack in 13.
Yeah.
In 17, was that different to 13 in terms of off-field? Maybe not, potentially maybe not.
Yeah, not as much.
Coley is pretty loose. So. Yeah. Wow. But no, I'd say this year, there isn't that red army. There's not the, you won't be coming out of the hotel going to a test match and the hotel was swamped by flags. So that will be different. That will be something to sort of get used to. But the guys who played a whole season in front of empty stadiums.
The boys seem to have a bit of a bond already, though. Even the tries at the weekend, you know what I mean? They've seemed very tight knit already. And that's obviously a really good thing going into what they're going into. Who was your kind of fella that you got the grips with over there in 09? Who was someone that you really got tight with over there?
To be fair, myself and Harry Ellis basically went off and played Scrabble most evenings.
classic Leicester clique. That is so Leicester. Oh, you never change, eh?
I was 23 years old. I was scared of everyone.
You should have said yes to everything.
I wasn't going up to Mr. O'Driscoll asking him to play Scrabble, was I? So I stuck with Harry. But yeah, I mean, to be fair, I think the boys, it won't be publicised, but presumably they've been on the piss.
Yeah, they have.
Day one, you go on the piss. That's how you get to know each other. Mm. Day two, after the game last night, presumably they're on the piss. That was probably the biggest standout thing for me in 09 was whether you played the Saturday game, you played the midweek game, you all went out to a nightclub, you all went out to a bar, all went to a disco back in the day. Yeah, discotheque.
With the flares.
Had a few beers, yeah. With your boot cuts.
Yeah, yeah.
Had a few beers, and that's how you get to know a team. So I think what you saw last night, like you said, they've been together for however long. They've been absolutely beasted over in Jersey in the baking hot sun and having a few beers, and it's the start of a team, and it's going to look class. That's why I was going to say, you know, do you reckon the Saffers will be concentrating on themselves purely and not looking too much into the Lions because they've been away apart for so long? Do they need time to bond again? I mean, do you think they will analyse the Lions as much as they would have done in normal circumstances, or is it just about them?
I think knowing Razzie and the way he's operated in Munster and stuff, they'll have the Lions boys properly like done to a fine tee before this ever got near this tour at this stage. That's how much detail he goes into in the opposition initially. I think now they'll start looking after themselves. But, you know, it's going to be an interesting tour. It'll be a nice one now come the first test. And in other things...
Well, hang on.
What?
2013, you two toured together.
We're not talking about 2013.
You got any stories on Shawnee? Because everyone seems to come on there and have a story about Shawnee. And I assume you must have.
I was exactly like Tom was in 09. Very young.
Don't do the usual. Don't shout over everyone. Let him have his moment. Just be quiet, Shawnee.
He never came out of his room.
Yeah. That's where the lie stops. Shawnee, just like you, playing Scrabble with himself, was he?
Crafty, moving on.
Yep, you've gone very red there, mate.
What have you been up to nowadays? What are you doing nowadays? Tell us a little bit about your life at the minute.
Obviously, it's coming soon for yourself, I presume. Yeah. The body's getting old.
Three more years. 39
by now. You've been told not reach your 24 still.
Yeah.
Years at Jersey.
Mm. I'm working for a housing developer. I retired on a Monday. I was told by the doc, you can't carry on playing. You're buggered. So I retired on a Monday. Next 3 months, I shot, I drank, didn't really do much else. Yeah. No pre-planning. I was Peter Pan as far as I was concerned. I was playing forever.
Yeah.
And 3 months later, I was like, actually, I haven't got a job. And thankfully, a friend of a friend through an old Ocamian. You know, they do come in handy. And I've gone into housing, into land buying for a housing developer, Davidson's Homes. There aren't other house builders. They are the best. Get in there.
Quick plug, down the camera lens. Sorry.
Davidson's Homes, they are the best.
Yeah. You're in the Leicestershire area, buy a house for them.
Midlands, mate.
Midlands. Oh, sorry.
So, yeah, so no, it's a completely different life for me now. Sort of not having that routine was hard to get used to. Not having that immaturity. You realize when you retire that when you start professionally at 17, 18, your maturity stops improving or maturing. By the time you retire at 33, 34, 35, you are an 18-year-old in the real world, and you can't go into an office and plum shot someone or call someone a favorite word. Mm. It's a whole different world. But to fair, the Lions being back, being involved with this, just getting back into rugby, I love it.
And you've always been a big supporter of the Matt Hampson Foundation. We've been to many events together, and part of the Davidson Homes, you know, they've built up two of the lodges, is it now, at the Hambo Foundation? Is that right?
Yeah, no, Hambo's, obviously, he got his big centre built, which is to help guys rehabilitate from spinal injury, sportsmen, women, even if they're not related to sport. It's a place for people to go, receive the best treatment, be around like-minded people, and actually just learn how to live with whichever way their life has taken. Now, Hambo's dream was always to have accommodation for people to come, because like he was in Stoke Mandeville, he was in hospital for 12 months. He was then sent home. Going from an able body, playing rugby, one terrible accident in a scrum, and then you can't move all by your neck. It's a life-changing thing. So Hambo wanted almost, I suppose, a halfway house almost. People can come to the centre, they can stay there with the families, with potentially new carers, and just learn to adapt. Because, you know, I broke mine out. I spoke to Hambo a huge amount before I returned back to rugby, just to see, is it the right decision? And you see what Hambo's doing, and Christ, you do it over and over again. You'd never change the decision to come back to play rugby. So fantastic. The obviously, Davidson's, who I'm involved with, offered to get involved, and have actually now helped deliver two fully equipped lodges to help people come to the centre. I think as soon as they're open, which is a couple of weeks, there's already two people destined to go in them, and they'll start their rehab journey and hopefully get home as soon as possible. So yeah, fantastic.
I think anyone who doesn't know Matt Hampson, he's so inspirational, because you know, he had this injury which was horrendous, but he wasn't happy just, you know, getting support and funding for himself, that he went out and has helped so many other people who aren't as fortunate to have the rugby community or people behind him. And I just think it's incredible. And, you know, what you're doing is unbelievable
well. He's a class guy. I mean, once he got his 80-inch TV sorted, he was out helping the world. So, and he's a Lions, one of the Lions' official charities as well. So hopefully that name will just, you know, spread across the world and get more and more support.
No, they're doing unbelievable work, and fair play to your company and everyone else that supports as well. It's been unbelievable. Goody, moving on. You've watched a good bit of rugby over the last 40 hours.
Yeah, obviously, being the having my sort of insight into Japanese rugby, I was needed for Channel 4 to watch the Ireland-Japan game.
She took my gig, I think.
Unfortunately, you were too pissed from Sandown, so they couldn't get hold of you. They drafted me in the last minute.
I was going down the track on horseback at that stage.
Yeah, exactly. I was over there. Heard a few more stories about you. We'll keep it off camera. They get worse, I tell you.
You didn't hear anything about me over there.
Stephen Ferris was very honest. Great man, by the way.
Me and my best
great
friend.
Man. He's in great nick as well. Goodness me.
He's a big boy of fezzes.
Fair play to him. But I think in the game, Japan showed us again how great they are at moving the ball. You know, scored some unbelievable tries. I think Ireland will probably be a little bit disappointed in themselves. They weren't great. Second half, they had to kick the ball a lot and go very structured to sort of grind the game down and win it. To the dismay of Luke Fitzgerald, who was quite critical on comms about it, but as you would know, Sean, you know him well.
He's absolutely hilarious. One of the best fellas you'll like have a conversation with, because he's so opinionated. Be like, oh, you know what I mean? Like, I don't agree with you. He wants to have an argument about stuff, but he's actually very knowledgeable about rugby and life in general. But he's entertaining. That's how I describe him to be around.
I thought you might have played Scrabble with him. He's quite an intelligent bloke. Yeah, 2009.
No, he wasn't from Leicester, so he can play.
Leicester.
Didn't make the call.
You can't spell, can you?
Leicester, so.
What about the England game?
Yeah, a lot of 12 debutants for England. Again, some of the talent on the show was unbelievable. I just think the consistency, Eddie would probably be a bit disappointed with the errors. You know, so many great half breaks or little breaks and then just throwing those offloads you can't do in Test rugby. And pretty disappointed that USA scored four tries as well.
I mean, do you not think that's just down to, I think the last time there were that many debutants was 1986. I'm going to throw that. You won't check that.
Good Googling.
We'll go with that. Do you not think it's so many guys out there just wanting to prove a point that it's snatching at balls. It's trying to go that extra yard, get the miracle offload, which caused that. And on top of that, who do you think was the standout player?
I think there's always that over-eagerness when you're the first cap and you want to do well, you want to impress Eddie. And I don't think anyone played badly in that sense. I just think there was just a few times where you think if you just kept hold of it a few more phases, you would have scored. But that's part of the learning development. It's a new team, the cohesion isn't there. I was really impressed with Freddie Stewart, obviously Leicester boy. He played really well, was accomplished, very assured.
Proper full-sized fullback.
I feel very small on camera right here next to you if anyone's watching. But yeah, no, he was very good, and Marcus Smith was assured. I was impressed with Lewis Ludlow as a captain to come in and do well himself, just do his own work, his own tackles, work hard, but also lead the guys with so many new players was impressive. So there's a lot of guys who put the hand up and did well. I think for Eddie, it's looking at how they perform, how they prepare, how they train, everything about it. And hopefully, you know, four or five of these guys will come through into the next squad.
Which is the whole idea of it. It's not 15 players getting new caps to come through. It's hopefully we'll get three or four. Freddie Stewart, for example, Marcus Smith will now become a regular and start pushing the guys who have been in those spots for a long time, which hopefully will bring some good things.
Yeah, and I think obviously that's probably the difference between Ireland and England, because Ireland went as pretty much as full strength apart from what Kian Healy, Sexton, maybe one other. And they weren't quite as impressive. Obviously playing a tougher team, but it probably didn't showcase for me as much as you'd want to see from some of the young guys. I don't know what you thought.
No, that's probably the thing. I think that Ireland could be missing a little bit of X factor when you take away the Jack Conans and, you know, the Johnnies, Keens, the older crew that are there kind of now. I know Jack's not old, but you take away that element and you put in someone new. It's always been a thing that people need to bed into Ireland, like the Ireland system, first and foremost. And to be fair, I will say that we only really saw Ireland expanding their game plan in that England game last year. That was the first time I've seen them like throw off loads, move the point of contact from where we had been playing a lot the last previous few years, because it was gone so structured that teams are just eating us up physically. And that England-Ireland game last year was the first time I've seen Ireland just move around a lot. So to bring in all the new guys that they have now as well into that squad, even though there's quite a few older guys still there, like I thought Pierre Manning was very impressive at the weekend again. Josh Van der Fleer was a machine again. But yeah, it takes a bit of time, I think. And because I suppose the differences in the provinces as well, some of the provinces try to play this unstructured rugby, some of them play a little bit more structured. Getting into that environment for the 10 days they're in there, trying to get back up to where they left off against England is going to be difficult. So I think you'll see a little bit more now this weekend coming of that more expansive type of game that they're trying to get to and trying to play a little bit more. So Hopefully it happens.
And did anyone catch the Wales Canada game?
Oh yeah,
yep. No. Well, New Zealand.
When's that on?
I only saw the clip from Nick Tompkins. He put on his social media. Great footwork. So
I've got kids, mate. I'm lucky to watch the Lions.
Two dogs.
I've been playing Lego the rest of the time. So.
What are you building at the moment?
Lego Mario.
Oh,
awesome.
That'd be good.
Makes noises when you pop around.
Does it?
Yeah.
Lego's gone up in the world since I was kid.
Yeah.
Unbelievable scenes.
I do. I was just going back to the Tonga game, the New Zealand Tonga game. I actually watched the highlights of that.
Very studious of you, mate.
And I, to be honest with you, I felt sorry for Tonga. I don't know, the captain's interview afterwards as well is hard to watch. Just his emotion and bits and pieces like that. I don't know if they're getting probably the support they need. And like to go out and you look at the first 12 minutes, New Zealand scored three tries.
And it was like, you'd swear Tonga weren't coached how to defend, for instance. And that's my point. Are they getting the right people in place? Are they getting what they need as players to actually try and perform against someone like that? Or is it just a case of, right, rocking up and, right, do your best type of thing, lads? And that's basically what he said afterwards, which is tough in the rugby world that we're living in now, that we should all get good opportunities. They should have the same opportunities as everyone else. So I felt bad for them after that game. They looked dejected after, obviously, 101 points, wasn't it, to nil.
Do you think they should be exposed to that type of game, or do they need to have games to build up?
I don't think they do, especially if they're in that place where they haven't got the support they need, or they haven't got the right people in the right places right now. Like, what have Tonga gotten out of that game?
Yeah, what do they do now?
What do they do? Yeah. So,
I think because of infrastructure, though, you know, they supply so much talent to the world, or New Zealand, England, Ireland, whoever, take so much of their talent. But we have to give back to grow the game. Everyone has to give to grow the game. And they need to be given, you know, the right coaches, help with that, the training facilities, so they can fly to games and not just be shipped over last minute and you know, struggle for games. And I think it's a big issue because the Pacific Islands don't get the support they deserve, and yet we all love to watch them. We love to see Tongans run over people, Samoans hit people hard, or Fijians step people.
Yeah.
It's one of the glories of the game, but if they don't get the support, the gap will just widen, and that's a problem for world rugby.
Correct. Yeah.
So that's all we have time for this week. Tom Croft, thank you very much for joining us. It's been a pleasure.
It's been lovely to see you. Mate, good catching up.
Yes.
Lovely, always.
Yeah. And thank you for watching and listening to the House of Rugby, powered by Vodafone.
House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe. Game changed.